My eyes will see only you. Only you have the magic technique. When we sway, I grow weak. I can hear the sound of violins long before it begins. Make me thrill as only you know how. Sway me smooth, sway me now. Other dancers may be on the floor, dear, but my eyes will see only you. Only you have the magic technique. When we sway, I grow weak. I can hear the sound of violins long before it begins. Make me thrill as only you know how. Sway me smooth, sway me now.
Sway me now.
You know how. Sway me smooth, sway me now.
Oh, I hear the horns blaring, and that means it's time for our public affairs show here on WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves. From Henry Ford Community College, yep, it's now time for the new WHFR Journal.
The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back.
Oh, Dino. It's hard to turn him down. Okay, the new WHFR Journal, let's dig deeper. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is February the 26th, 2010. Oh, we're not out of Michigan winter yet. Oh, the snow is falling again. Another 2 to 5 inches, they say, and I think another 2 or 3 inches have come down today already. The roads are slippery, but fairly clear at this point because it seems to be melting when the snow hits the roadway. But that means there's a little iciness out there. So please be careful what you're doing if you're listening to this show live and not the podcast on some other day when there might be less trouble here. But my name is Jay Koronek, and I'm joined in the studio by our WHFR news reporter, Amy Powers. How are you doing today, Amy? How was the driving for you today?
It was just fine. I say, let it snow, let it snow. I like seeing the snow.
Okay. We're waiting for our WHFR news director, Dennis Reimars, to get here. He just called, and he said he's trying to get here alive, which is always a good idea. It's hard to go on the radio if you're dead.
Safety first.
Yeah, you got to be able to talk. And he will probably have a brief report for us about the Homelessness Marathon that we got through all 14 hours on Tuesday. If you missed it, you can go to homelessnessmarathon.org, and they've archived the whole 14 hours, but you might want to catch an hour or two. I think it was the second hour that our Michigan Senator Levin was actually interviewed for about 10 minutes on the via phone. Didn't want to come out in the cold,
believe you're
I guess.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. But in any event, we had a lot of fun here. It moved us, and it made us aware of an issue, and we hope some of you got into part of that discussion because it's a big story that is not covered on the commercial media as much as it should be. We need to do something about that problem and all the problems that relate to it. In terms of the weather, I'm going to start by reading something from a couple days ago, about a week ago or so, when in New York City got their first big deluge of snow. And they've been getting, along with Washington, D.C. and the east coast of the U.S., you know, just tremendous downfalls, just, you know, 12-plus inches three, four times in the last 2 weeks. And so it's piling up there. And I know New York City schools are closed today, and pretty much everything is coming to a halt. Of course, some people would say, hey, the stock market and Congress are coming to a halt. No big deal.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, thank goodness.
A few dollars saved.
They can't mess anything else up, yeah. Can you collect your bonuses at Goldman Sachs?
Direct deposit.
That's right.
Absolutely.
They probably do immediate
right
electronic. You don't even have to go into the office to get the check, yeah. Oh, well. So Thomas J. Friedman, who is an observer of economics worldwide, I think a couple of weeks ago I said he was Nobel Prize winner, who writes for the New York Times. That's Paul Krugman. Krugman is the economist, but Friedman is the economist, and he's written several books about worldwide business, and so he knows the world really well, let me say that. So here's his editorial that I think is appropriate when you think about the weather today, because people like Fox News and others are really on the wrong beam when it comes to what this weather means. He says, Thomas Friedman, of the festivals of nonsense that periodically overtake American politics, surely the silliest is the argument that because Washington is having a particularly snowy winter, it proves that climate change is a hoax, and therefore we need not bother with all this girly man stuff like renewable energy, solar panels, and carbon taxes. Just drill, baby, drill. The climate science community is not blameless, he goes on to say. It was up against formidable forces, and it knew that, from the oil and coal companies that financed the studies skeptical of climate change to conservatives who hate anything that will lead to more government regulations to the Chamber of Commerce that will resist any energy taxes. Therefore, climate experts can't leave themselves vulnerable by citing non-peer-reviewed research or failing to respond to legitimate questions. Although there remains a mountain of research from multiple institutions about the reality of climate change, the public has grown uneasy. What's real? In my view, and that's Thomas Friedman talking in the New York Times from the 17th of February, the climate science community should convene its top experts and produce a simple 50-page report. They could call it What We Know, summarizing everything we already know about climate change in language that a sixth grader could understand. I wonder how many people, though, actually read below that level right now, unfortunately, in this country. Anyway, and so Friedman says, he says, here are the points I like to stress. Number one, avoid the term global warming. I prefer the term global weirding. 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 Because that is what actually happens as global temperatures rise and the climate changes. The weather gets weird. The hots are expected to get hotter, the wets wetter, the dries drier, and the most violent storms, like snowstorms, more numerous. Number two, those who favor taking action are saying, because the warming that humans are doing is irreversible and potentially catastrophic, let's buy some insurance by investing in renewable energy, energy efficiency, and mass transit, because this insurance will also actually make us richer and more secure, unquote. Friedman goes on to say, we will import less oil, invent and export more clean tech products, and more importantly, diminish the dollars that are sustaining the worst petro dictators in the world. And we know who those petro dictators are, don't we? Middle East. Okay.
I thought it was Halliburton, but go on.
Well, yeah, some people think it's closer to home than that even, but, you know, it's like in the U.S., if you have a president, like not necessarily the present president, although he's not perfect as progressives see him anyway, a president of the United States that doesn't say anything about conservation, doesn't make conservation, not just drilling, the number one priority, because we can save more jobs and we can become less dependent on foreign oil just by talking to everybody about how we can conserve energy, okay? But and of course, investing in green tech, which our last president for 8 years did not want to do. Oh, no, no. Well, we need to buy ourselves some insurance. There's no doubt about that. And it will create jobs. No doubt about it.
Well, the basic facts remain the same. I mean, for decades now, we've needed to and make more of a concentrated effort on conserving energy. Sure. And I thought one of the biggest disappointments after 9/11 was Bush not telling or asking Americans to do more for the country, do more to sort of preserve our own resources and make sacrifices, you know, little victory gardens, do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't not just go out and shop.
Right. Well, there's a whole range of things. And I pointed out, just to really, you know, make the argument complete a couple of weeks ago, is that, and it's been mentioned for years, we really, most experts say we're past the point of what's called peak oil, the tipping point. In other words, we're, in upcoming years, going to have less and less oil available because there's less and less on this planet, under the earth.
And more and more people.
An oil shale.
That
use it and burn it, right?
Yes.
And so prices are going to go up. But get this, all underground oil that anybody can afford is probably going to be gone in 30 to 50 years. Gone. Nobody will be able to afford it. It'll be $100 a gallon or something. that will hurt all of our industries. For example, plastics. What is plastic made out of?
Yep, petroleum.
Oil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, processed oil. So they have a commercial for plastic on television. They show an emergency operating room in a hospital. It said, what if there wasn't any more plastic? And so the syringes, all the tubes, you know, half of the operating table, light fixtures, everything disappears.
Okay.
And they got this guy, well, I don't think he's cut open yet, but, you know, guy on the table and can't operate because all the plastic is gone. What are we going to use instead of plastic? Do you know how much plastic we have? We're probably wearing clothes that are mostly plastic, each of us right now even. The thermal fill, the fiber fill in our parkas is made from plastic. You know, oh my gosh. So the third point, let me finish this after I clear my throat. It gets me all choked up to talk about such tragedy and disaster. But number three point from Thomas Friedman, he says that even if climate change proves less catastrophic than some fear, in a world that is forecast to grow from 6.7 billion to 9.2 billion people between now and 2050, as Amy mentioned, more and more of whom will live like Americans or want to live like Americans, demand for renewable energy that's wasteful. Like Americans, really, we are wasteful of limited resources that will be gone in just a few years, folks. So shame on us, but shame on our leaders for not taking us in the right direction years ago. The leaders are supposed to be smart. They're supposed to lead. They're supposed to know stuff and take us in the right direction if we don't have the wherewithal ourselves. And, of course, as he concludes, and Tom Watkins in one of the local papers, an editorial columnist that is picked up by the Times Herald, talking about China. China, of course, understands all of this that he just pointed out, which is why it is investing heavily in clean tech, efficiency, and even high-speed rail. You know, apparently they're investing so heavily in high-speed rail that when Michigan, in about 5 years, mm-hmm. needs to buy a high-speed rail train, we're going to have to buy it from China because there's mm-hmm. nobody in the U.S. making one right now.
Yeah.
Okay, and that just goes to show we're going to lose more jobs because we're not moving fast enough, even in all the clean tech, as it's called, areas, but even high-speed rail. It's going to be Chinese high-speed rail trains we're going to have to buy. They'll probably break down and fail like certain Japanese cars, too. But let's build them ourselves, so if they fail, we got no one to blame but ourselves, you know. That's what I say.
And most, like, I do believe in American manufacturing and American products. It'll be highly disappointing if it comes to that. I think Americans do make the best quality products. And we have the strictest standards. China really doesn't. You have to wonder what you're getting. You may need, you know, think you need it, but what
do you really get? A totalitarian dictatorship like China is, in effect, you know, they should be regulating all their products better, but because their dictatorship wants profit, you know, the good old capitalism profit unrestricted, they're not regulating their own industries even.
No.
They're somewhat aware they've got to cut down on air pollution, which is really bad in some of their cities.
Yes, yeah, so but it's difficult to hear China's, you know, held up to this wonderful standard regarding progressive technology when they have so many drawbacks.
Yeah, the regulations we have, even quality standard regulations, they basically come, I mean, where do these regulations come from? Not local or state government, sometimes state, but usually from the federal government. They have to for consistency all across the U.S. And so, you know, conservatives, I'm sorry, there's some things big government has to do, and yes, we need more regulations. Just an aside here, I think Jim Hightower pointed out in one of his editorial comments on this show last week that nothing has been done to regulate Wall Street, that there's no new regulations in effect to prevent a similar meltdown of 2008. Nothing. As we know, executive bonuses are bigger than ever, and yet the government still owns or is owed money by a lot of the big Wall Street firms. But nothing. Nobody's turning the screws on them. Nobody's regulating, even though Obama said, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. He told them that. And so I saw some of the cameras on the Wall Street bankers in the audience snickering. You know, let them try. You know, we control this country.
They are having the last laugh.
Yeah, well, so far,
yeah.
You know. But our government could do the right thing if the politicians would get together. So here is just a summary for those that missed it. And I know everybody was watching all 6.5 hours of the health forum. Republicans call it a debate. And then Fox News said, well, who won the debate? It was a forum. It was a summit to discuss things. Well, they wound up disgusted. That's my joke anyway, I think, at the end. The summary is that health talks failed to bridge partisan rift. Washington. This is from the New York Times, and I know they're considered a liberal paper, but I think it's very fair, and I'll just do it quick because we want to go into a John Dingell local comment that's in local papers this week about this. Washington is the place where they wrote it. If there was any question about how deeply divided Republicans and Democrats are about to, or about how to reshape the American healthcare system, consider that they spent the first few hours of President Obama's much-anticipated healthcare forum on Thursday arguing over whether they were, in fact, deeply divided. Are we deeply divided? I don't know. Yes, we are. No, we're not deeply divided. Yes, we are. No, we're not. The forum played out with Obama serving as moderator, MC, and chief defender of Democratic policy prescriptions. He and his fellow Democrats tried to make the case that the two parties were closer than they thought, with the implication that their bill was centrist and would be acceptable to mainstream voters. The public option, for example, or ensuring all Americans, was dropped by the Democrats. It's not on the table. It's not in the latest 11-page bill.
And I 11 page?
It's only 11 pages. What the Democrats put together as the bill they want to pass right now is only 11 pages long. They wanted to make it simple and direct, and yet there's Republicans at the forum who had the 600-page bill that isn't the one that was passed by either the House or the Senate and is not the one currently being endorsed by the Democrats that they were trying to quote from. So nothing like quoting from something that's not under discussion.
Yeah.
I mean, pro or con, it doesn't make any sense, you know. And here he is, well, 600 pages. That's not what the Democrats are going to do. And if they have to, they can do reconciliation where, oh my God, a mere majority, I thought that was the principle of democracy, could have its way. And by the way, reconciliation, folks, as I've said on the show before, has been used by Republicans when they were in a majority many times to get bills passed over a potential Democratic filibuster in the Senate. So don't give me that Republicans, oh, reconciliation, that's a dirty pool. Nobody should use that, blah, blah, blah. You know, I say nobody should use the 60-vote number to try to get something passed that a majority agrees in. And the Republicans know that they've used reconciliation themselves when they were in the majority. So don't say it's dirty pool now. You know, you loved it then. So that's just crazy. Okay, so again, not much came out of it. Although if you saw certain highlights, I thought Barack Obama, our president, got a few good one-liners in at times. Not really harmful, but they were chiding, correcting statements. And last night on The Daily Show by Jon Stewart, he was making jokes that, hey, what a concept. Get people from different opinions together in a room, set an agenda, and talk about it. And then vote. That maybe a majority might get their way after that happens. And then, oh, but then there's big states and little states. And, well, maybe you could have two groups, one from the small states and one from the big states. And then they would talk and vote and work out their differences and get the president. Wow. What a great idea. Oh, I'm sorry, and this was the point of the satire. That's what we have, supposed. That's what's in the Constitution, how it's supposed to work. So why haven't these people, and Republicans say, oh, it's all behind the scenes, back door. We've been talking about that in Congress, in their committees, Democrats and Republicans attending, for a year now. And then Republicans can, you know, for the first 3 hours, say, we got to go back to zero on this. Duh. Where were they for the last year? Were they doing zero for the last year? I guess they were. Otherwise, just unbelievable. Majority rule. People talk about things. People vote. Majority gets its way. That's the essence of a democracy. It's the way it's written in the Constitution, folks. Okay. What does John Dingell have to say? Okay. He released, I think it's his office had a press release, but they put it in a special section of the Sunday Press and Guide from last Sunday. And I'll just go over this. I want to welcome into the studio our news director, Dennis Reimars. And Dennis, did you want to give us a weather update?
Wow. Yeah. No, it's rough. It's rough. I'm here. Mm-hmm. That was never in doubt.
Uphill, two miles
yeah,
both ways.
My brother on my back. Oh, but geez. I have to tell you that I was listening on the way in, and I almost turned.
He had snowshoes on.
I did. Of course, I had snowshoes. I'm prepared. I'm a news director. Mm-hmm. No, but the reality is, you guys were doing such a good show. I was contemplating turning around so I don't ruin it.
Wow.
So I'm just going to sit here, nod my head, and smile if that's okay, because that's good radio.
I want to talk to you about the Homelessness Marathon after this story.
Okay? Oh, okay.
Don't go away.
Since you were there for all those hours, and just give us a little insight
what it was
like
tired.
Down at the Cass Corridor this Tuesday night, part of our marathon. But Dennis was there along with our news director, Lynn Grunst, and did...
Two news directors? She's our...
Our program director, yeah. Right. There's so many directors.
She's higher up on the ladder than I am,
yeah,
I know that.
But...
Jay says, yeah.
Both of them, if they were Catholic, they should qualify for a sainthood. That's what I think.
Wow.
They did that kind of job down there, I heard. Hmm. And they didn't get arrested either. So, you know, it's perfect. Okay, here's the story.
Well, that was the miracle part.
Yeah.
Well, weren't very, very much activism if you didn't get arrested.
Probably the cops would come in and arrest all those homeless and all those people that are trying to feed them and help them. You know,
exactly.
And let them go on the radio. Oh, my God. You let homeless people talk on the radio? Oh, geez. Okay, Congressman Dingell. He made the following remarks after Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius released a new report on health insurance premium increases. And you probably heard about this about a week or so ago in California. And here's the background on that, too. The report from our own Health and Human Services federal government office is entitled Insurance Companies Prosper, Families Suffer, Our Broken Healthcare System. It came out after Anthem Blue Cross announced its intentions to raise rates on its California customers by as much as 39%. And I also heard their response when they were criticized for that. Well, yeah, some people, it's only going to be raised 25%.
Only.
25% when we're talking about probably $1,000 or a couple $1,000 a year in health costs, depending on who and what and where you are. And it's going to be 25% more. Well, that's hundreds of dollars for the average person, maybe per month increase, even at 25%. And I think it's really cheeky for an insurance company to
it's
do that.
Pretty bold statement.
Yeah, during the discussion of health care, this is not going to help their
right.
cause.
Right.
You know, if the majority of people's opinion means anything, and apparently it doesn't that much to our politicians because they don't respond when it's obvious that universal health care still has a majority support in this country by the American public. But our politicians are not doing it. Oh, we can't get that because we can't negotiate. And we got politics here and we got to work out a compromise. A majority want universal single payer health care. Nobody pays premiums. Nobody pays for prescription drugs. We all pay for it together for everybody. Oh, that would break our country. Well, it's not breaking Canada, who has a nice, stable economy. They were the least hurt by the 2008 problem. It's not hurting Germany and France and England. In fact, it's the top priority for them to do that for their people. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. It's the ethical, the humane, the moral thing to do. And I've actually heard a few Republicans and also, yes, a few individuals saying, well, I'm not going to pay for the health insurance for some poor people. Oh, shame on you. I bet they're even Christians, or I bet they go to a Christian church. And even Muslims know you've got to be helpful and supportive to people that have less than you. I say even. Okay, that's wrong. But, I mean, some people don't believe, you know, they think, you know, certain people, if they're not Christian, they can't believe anything like we do. In fact, take a look at Islamic principles, and you'll see a lot of what we think are Christian concepts in the way that they want to treat each other and have society work. I'm not a Muslim. I don't believe in all their principles, but a lot of really good principles there, folks, which look a lot like Christian, and I don't see where people are coming from on this principle of health insurance. Well, Dingell said this. We're getting to that. Okay. This report should not surprise anyone, he said. There will be those who blame the recession and regulation and try to paint these insurers as overburdened good Samaritans promoting free enterprise while protecting the public's health and well-being. Those defending the companies just gloss over the lack of competition, the failure to contain cost, the obscene rate hike requests that exceed the rise of medical inflation, all standard business operations for insurers that have our nation verging on economic calamity. Again, these are the words of our rep for part of Dearborn anyway, and most of Downriver, John Dingell. Without health care reform, he says, he goes on to say, what protects the American people's hard-earned money from simply adding to record profits and covering astronomical overhead costs? The companies will continue to conduct business as usual, hiking premiums, shrinking benefits, laying off mid-level employees, handing out fat checks to executives and lobbyists. That's unquote. That's John Dingell. That's what he said. There's a story about Dingell and other people running this year for election or re-election that we're going to do, but I'd like to go to Dennis right now and talk about just some of the, you were down there through at Cass Corridor Community Center, the remote broadcast facility for the Homelessness Marathon this last Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. What were some of the two or three things that still linger in your mind if you've come out of the lack of sleep?
I got plenty of sleep. I caught up.
Dream. Okay.
It was 14 hours, and just everybody's been thanked a million times, so I don't want to go into that, but it was just, that part of it was incredible. I think what the two or three things that I came out most is how self-sufficient so many of the people were, and it may sound naive to say that. Well, I thought that there would be, you know, it would be more of a charitable atmosphere, and it wasn't. And where I'm going with this is the Cass Community Services, the building that we were in. Two things jumped out at me. One, the homeless people there are actually working. They're earning money at the facility, at the shelter, because they find illegally disposed of tires in the city of Detroit, and they bring them in, and they have this machine there that shreds them into thin strips. And I know we've heard about, you know, using this for like AstroTurf and roads and things like that. Well, they take the rubber and they make it into like mats that you would have on your front porch, and they sell these. And they have contracts with, you know, University of Michigan, Michigan State, and these people are earning a wage at the shelter making these things. And I talked to some of the people that are doing, and they're just, their dignity, they're just so. They're just like, well, I'm a productive person, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful. So if people would go there expecting somebody to have their hand out, they would be really, really in for the surprise when they found out these people are willing to do so much for us as the visitors. We were their guests. Mm-hmm. So that, and then the other thing is the Green Gym. Have you heard of this?
No.
They have a Green Gym there, and apparently it was in USA Today maybe a month ago. And Ed, and his name escapes me, his last name, and I will find it before we're done here. He's the director of operations. Just a wonderful man. The first thing he said to me, and the second, and probably the fifth and sixth, too, is, if you need anything, please tell me. I can help you. I can get it for you. And they have a gym there, and there's 10 exercise bikes that are wired up to this machine. And it's not a tremendous offset, but they're offsetting a lot of their the utility or energy requirements through the workout room. And it's called a Green Gym. And, again, they power partial power of their facility through the exercise equipment, and that will grow, and that will grow more and more. So those are the things that stood out. So I stood
who's
in line.
Who's using it? The guests of
the homeless, the people in the shelter. That's are using fantastic. It. They were exercising while we were there. Punching bag. There's a foosball table. There's ping pong. And then the third and final, I know you've given me more time than I deserve here, but the third and final thing that really, really stuck out to me was they have this really, really, really glossy brochure. Okay. I was talking to this lady, a homeless lady who helps out, or she's no longer, she's formerly homeless, and she helps out Jeremy with this marathon each year. And she said, you know, you got to be careful when the corporations get involved in these shelters. You have to be really careful, because then the agenda changes, and then it becomes something a little less charitable and becomes more of a bureaucracy, you know, bureaucratic things, and the decisions are made from different people. And I asked her, I said, Sherry, well, Sherry, how do you know when it turns that corner? How do you know when it reaches that level? And she held up one of the CAS Community Services brochures. She says, buy glossy brochures. That's how you can tell. And I said, that's very interesting. Right after that, immediately after that, Ed needed me to go with him. And I went with him and I brought this up and I said, Ed, these brochures, somebody might take the idea that maybe your money is going in a different direction. You know, maybe the, it could be better spent on the people. And he said, well, let me tell you something, Dennis. He says, we go after some high dollar things. He says, we have a lot of things. We own the building we're in. We just bought that building across the street. We own all these things and we're doing a lot of great things here. We need money to do it. Sometimes we need $250 a plate fundraisers to do this. And I'll tell you what, Dennis, he said, a crayon on a napkin isn't going to cut it. He said, to get that kind of money, sometimes you have to do something like this, glossy. And he said, it's a small price to pay. You'd be really shocked at how little we pay for this. Mm. But it's a small price to pay for the kind of money that we're making to help people. And I can't argue with that.
Yep. Yep. That's true.
So two very good points, but ultimately Ed knew.
Seen from two different points of view.
And both of them were right from their experiences. But they know what they're doing down there.
We're going to take a break. Dennis, it was a major effort on your part and Lynn's and all the dozen or so people that were board ops through the night here. And those that got involved really got more than they expected. I mean, a deep understanding of the problem and what it takes to get people's attention. You know, maybe we didn't have more than a couple hundred listeners at any point in time. But hopefully those people that did listen, even for a few minutes, now have a new perspective on this problem and all the other problems that relate to it. We're just talking about health insurance relates to, I mean, what if all the homeless could get all the health care they needed?
Jay,
well, they'd,
right.
they'd be healthier on the streets. They'd get the drugs they needed, you know, if they had to treat their problems. They'd be better able maybe to get a job or whatever. You can't get a job if you're in bad health. You can't even survive for very long.
Just to function in
society. Just to function, yeah. Life, liberty, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Life comes first, and you can't have life without health. I'm glad we did it, and I hope our listeners got a chance to catch part of it. As I said earlier, homelessnessmarathon.org, they've archived, I think, the whole 14 hours, or at least highlights, and you should check that out if you weren't able to catch it this Tuesday night and Wednesday morning here at WHOR. But I thank all of the volunteer staff for all the time they put in on that.
And thank you, Jay. Jay, you did a lot, too. And I don't think that, I mean, you're too modest to bring this up, but you've done so much. And everybody there was so grateful because you were the biggest cog in the wheel that we were a part of as a radio station. So thank you.
Oh, we'll keep you on staff, Dennis. Thanks for that.
Okay, I was late. You know.
In that case, I second that.
Said you didn't want to work.
Boy, they're going to be on this show for a long time now. We have a couple comments from Jim Hightower back to back. I know it's hard, but to focus, but they're really well described. One is called The People Speak Congress Fiddles. I think we know what that one's about. We'll do that one second. But first, lawmakers dance with the devil. And John Conyers is part of and he's a rep on the east side of Dearborn, a lot of Detroit, to Congress in Washington, D.C. And he's part of the Black Caucus, as they call it, African-American legislators, Senate and House. And they have a nonprofit organization to help people, which is kind of nice. They raise money for their own collective organization. Oh, but anyway, listen to this and listen to the other comment, too. The first one is called about the Black Caucus and their foundation, Lawmakers Dance with the Devil. WHFR.FM, making waves.
...that you're in the lead. This is a fundamental rule that the Congressional Black Caucus apparently forgot. An important and effective group of law...
Oh, phooey, we missed the beginning there. Let's get the very first words. Let's start this over. By golly, we'll get it right eventually. Here we go. Jim Hightower, take it away.
If you choose to dance with the devil, never flatter yourself that you're in the lead. This is a fundamental rule that the Congressional Black Caucus apparently forgot. An important and effective group of lawmakers who are often the principal voice of progressive values in the U.S. House, the CBC has allowed itself to be swept into the ever-tighter embrace of lobbyists for tobacco giants, drug makers, insurance interests, and other corporate powers that want legislative favors from the caucus. To woo the CBC, these corporate devils have put on philanthropic cloaks and are striding through a wide-open loophole in congressional ethics rules. While there are strict limits on lobbyist donations to lawmakers, special interest money going to nonprofit charities is largely unregulated. Thus, the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation, which exists to provide educational programs for low-income African Americans, has received more than $53 million in the past few years from the likes of AT&T, Altria, Eli Lilly, Lockheed Martin, State Farm, and Walmart. So what, sniffs a lobbyist for Lockheed, our charitable donations are charitable donations. How diabolically philanthropic of him. He did not mention that Lockheed's charitable donation bought it a seat on the CBC Institute that develops the organization's formal legislative positions. Or that CBC's Institute, big surprise, recently took a specific position to help Lockheed win a big airport contract in Liberia. Now that's charity with a purpose. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, the bulk of the charitable dollars raised by CBC do not go to the disadvantaged, but to finance lavish dinners, casino events, golf outings, and other extravaganzas where the lobbyists get to schmooze with the lawmakers. And the devil keeps dancing faster and laughing louder.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Who says Americans can't find agreement on anything? All it took to bring us together in determined unity was that black-robed gang of democracy thieves sitting on the Supreme Court. The latest national poll shows that Americans of all political stripes overwhelmingly oppose the recent decree by the Supremes to allow unlimited corporate spending in our elections. Holy Thomas Jefferson, shouted 85% of Democrats to the pollsters. No. Likewise, 81% of independents said, no way. But get this, 76% of Republicans also joined in this emphatic national uh-uh to the court's corporatization of our politics. Indeed, the decision was opposed by big majorities of all ages, education levels, and racial categories. So, with 8 out of 10 Americans united in opposition to this gaping wound that the court inflicted on our democracy, we can expect quick action by Congress to heal it. Right? No. First, Republican leaders, who are ever faithful tail-wagging cowtowers to any whim of their corporate sponsors, have cheered this unleashing of special interest money and will oppose any efforts to restrict it. Second, the Democrats' designated leader for dealing with the court's ruling is Senator Chuck Schumer, a notorious corporate servant whose chief skill is raising corporate campaign cash. Sending Schumer to restrain the political power of corporations is like going lion hunting with a fly swatter. This is Jim Hightower saying, sure enough, Schumer is not even considering a constitutional amendment to force these corporate powers out of our elections, instead offering a patchwork of regulatory band-aids to cover the wound but not heal it. To get real action, we have to produce it ourselves. Connect with these two grassroots coalitions, freespeechforpeople.org and movetoamend.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
And we're back with the second half of the new WHFR Journal for Friday, February the 26th, 2010. I'm Jay Cornick here with Dennis and Amy, and we wanted to look at local stories in the Press and Guide and Times Herald. There's actually a number of people who are filing early to be an elected representative either to the state of Michigan or to Congress, and it's kind of interesting on who those people are. And we have a late-breaking press release that didn't even get in this week's papers. How do you like that? Talk about a news team we got here, huh? We get the press releases that you'll see next week. So here's how it works out. And here's some of our yours truly's comments. The most up-to-date story, of course, is in the Press and Guide because it has the latest deadline for printing. From Wednesday, February 24th, on page 3A, it talks about early filers filing for being a candidate, off and running, it's entitled. And who's running for Gino Polidori's seat? Let's talk about that first. Again, he's the elected representative from pretty much just the city of Dearborn. That wasn't gerrymandered out of existence, at least not from Michigan anyway. And he's term limited. He's had, was it three terms? Somebody perk up here on the news team. Three terms is the term limitation for a House rep. No, it's six years, three terms. Yeah, I'm fairly sure of that, yeah. Just like Gary Warrenchuk said when he was the rep from this area, he was a Democrat, he was a Republican at the time, but he said when we interviewed him as sort of his exit comments after his 6 years, gee, I'm just getting the hang of it. I just figured out how it works, and I can make decisions without listening to lobbyists now. And it's interesting, today on the news, a person that I don't respect, but it's probably just political, former Governor John Engler, he said the same thing. Term limits have got to be ended. So did late great mayor of Dearborn, Mayor Guido. We don't need those term limits. The good people we want to keep in office, their maturity, their knowledge, and so on, and that's the way it is with Congress in Washington, D.C. President is limited to two terms, but not senators or House of Representatives people. But here in Michigan, oh my gosh, governor, senators, House of Representatives in Lansing, all term limited, and so we'll be losing Governor Granholm and our local representative, Gino Polidori, who's our senator from this area. I just went blank on that. Our state, Michigan state senator from this area.
I can dig it
out. He must be doing a great job, you know? Okay. Or she. Well, Linda Tafelsky has announced. And, of course, we'll go over these candidates' backgrounds. The primary, if there's more than one candidate in the Democratic or Republican Party, there'll be an election to pick the top Democrat and Republican for those contests in August of this year. In fact, I think it's August 2nd or 3rd, which is kind of unfortunate because Dearborn Homecoming used to be a great place for the people of Dearborn to go and meet the candidates, even before the primary election, as they call it. But no, because of just how the calendar works, the first full weekend, I think Homecoming starts on the 6th, that Friday, and the election is what would be the 3rd. So the primary election is the 3rd, and you won't have the benefit of meeting and greeting these people before then. So we hope maybe this summer in some of these contests, especially the outsiders, the less well-financed candidates, and some of the third-party candidates, but they won't be part of the primary. But we'll try to get them in here for an interview and see what they have to say. Linda Tafelsky, who is she? Name sound familiar? She's the mother of Tom Tafelsky. Now, she's been a teacher in the Dearborn system. She took early retirement buyout this year, and that's great. She's making way for others, and it was a nice thing to do. I think she was only in her 50s, but she qualified after years of service, and she wants to help Dearborn by running as a Democrat for Polidori's seat. Well, what didn't get in the paper, probably because somebody immediately told the other potential candidate, or at least one of the other candidates, what happened, George DeRaney, Dearborn City Councilman George DeRaney, announced, and this is dated Monday, but I didn't see it Monday. It was late Monday, and I didn't pick it up until later, but he has announced that he's going to run for state rep this year as a Democrat. So he and Linda Tafelsky will be on the ballot, the primary ballot, August 3rd, at least the two of them, maybe more, because the deadline hasn't passed yet, to choose from. So who's going to be the best Democratic candidate for representing this area, as for the last 6 years we've had Gino Polidori up there. Very interesting. Of course, Polidori can't seek re-election because of term limits. DeRaney and Tom Tafelsky, who is the council president here in Dearborn, the son of Linda Tafelsky, seem to be somewhat similar in their sort of outsider or critical opinions about the way the council was voting. Many votes were Tafelsky and DeRaney versus the other five. And the other five would get their way. You know, democracy, majority rule. Amazing, huh?
Yeah. They were.
But often, Tafelsky and DeRaney were not exactly in line with the mayor. You know, mayor proposes most of these resolutions, I think, or says, I want to see it happen. And so if there's some sort of bad politics or bad experiences between Mayor O'Reilly and Tom Tafelsky, you might, for that reason, and just politics, folks, okay, probably nothing personal here, Mayor O'Reilly might come out to endorse George DeRaney, and that would give him the head start. Although, you never know, maybe people who go into the primary to vote, they see the name Tofolsky, they might think it's Tom's name. They don't see that it says Linda there, because Tom Tofolsky was the largest vote getter. That's why he's called president of the council and why he chairs the meetings, because he got more votes than any other council candidate, and he has done that for the last couple times. So he has personal popularity in that spot. Will it transfer to his mother, former Dearborn teacher? I think it's great she said, well, her primary agenda is to improve education, and she knows because she was here in Dearborn as a teacher, and so I love hearing that. I mean, I do. I don't know who I'm going to vote for. I'm not saying, but not at this point. It's far too early to say. I've met George DeRaney, wonderful person in many ways. A lot of people like him. He's got an extensive resume here, and it'll come out in the paper next week, all of his years of this or that. And he's even helped a lot of nonprofits like the Carmanos Cancer Institute. He's been in a leadership position with them. In fact, it says that all of his leadership positions with them, 15 years, he helped raise more than $350,000 for them. And that's nice. He came in third in the council race in November, so he wasn't the top vote getter. That was Tom Tofolsky, but he came in third out of seven, so that's not bad. So, and I don't know anybody that doesn't, you know, like him as a person. I'm sure Linda is wonderful too, but she hasn't been out there circulating as a person, and I'm sure she will start right away. So there's a little competition there, okay, between now George DeRaney, and that wasn't in the paper yet, and Linda Tofolsky as Democrats. Okay. John Dingell and John Conyers are going to be running again. You probably heard this on national news if you follow that. They're definitely seniors, senior members of Congress. They're definitely senior citizens. They're more than age 65, that's for sure. Dingell, in fact, I saw in the article here, is 83 years old. And he's not in the best of health. If you've seen him locally in his appearance, he's always flying back and forth. He goes to a lot of meetings. He has a little trouble walking. I'll be lucky to be walking at 83
at that age,
myself.
I'd say he's doing fairly well.
Well, he's got universal health care, you know.
Well, the mind works.
Well, he doesn't have universal. He has the best health care above and beyond,
right.
The premium, the gold, platinum, the special
right.
room.
As all our representatives do, and certainly they deserve it. But why don't we all deserve it, too? Anyway, I mean, he is a leader in trying to get health care for all of us folks. His dad introduced the first bill that never went anywhere in 1948 for universal single-payer health care in this country. His dad, you call him Mr. Dingell, I guess. I don't know his first. Oh, he was John Dingell
Sr. Sure, he was a John, yeah.
Yeah, because it's John Dingell Jr., I believe, who we're dealing with here. So, and I think Dingell was going to retire, but of course, it's the off-election year. If the president is going to continue to have to pass his agendas, they can't take a chance that some other Democrat who doesn't have the rep of Dingell and Conyers, for that matter, even Conyers, with his wife got in trouble on the council, Detroit City Council issue, and that's still being adjudicated, so who knows there. But Conyers' record in Congress and Dingell's record is exemplary. Now, you may not agree with their liberal or, in Conyers' case, very progressive positions on things, but they have well represented the people of their district, worked very hard for decades. We're talking probably 50 years, 40, 50 years at least for both of them, and they know how things work. And they have seniority, which means they control committees, although Dingell's was taken off a committee for political reasons, but he still is allowed to be like a subcommittee chair of the healthcare issue, which is probably why we got his press release sent this way, too. So he's still doing everything he can for getting something good passed. So it's unfortunate we can't let these people retire, that the Democrats can't, but you know, they certainly have the experience and knowledge and seniority to get things accomplished. It's up to the voters to decide there. I'm sure they'll be running unopposed. You know, Democrats won't put another name up because they don't want to muddy the waters. We don't know about governor race. Andy Dillon, who is, again, a local rep from Dearborn Heights area to Lansing, he's got an exploratory committee still exploring whether or not he should run. But we know and reported here that Virge Bonero, Lansing mayor, has officially thrown his hat in the ring I don't know if he wears a hat, but that's the phrase. Along with Alma Wheeler Smith, which I know nothing about. She's a Democrat also hoping to win. So that primary is going to be big, especially for the Democrats in August, because you're going to choose from all the different Democrats who might still be in the running for governor. So you get to choose your Democratic candidate for governor in that primary, as well as any Republicans if you want to vote on that side, too. I think it's
important. Or any independents.
No, independents won't be on the primary.
No, you're right.
Oh, you mean independent Democrats, Republicans. Yeah, that's. I was going to say that the whole primary system is set up to give advanced publicity and generate interest in Democratic and Republican candidates, all of them. Mm. But third parties that we know of and have been had on this show, the next two biggest political parties, the Libertarian Party and the Green Party of Michigan, they choose their own candidate, and they will do it in probably by the end of May, and that's it, because they don't want to fight among themselves. They're small groups. Why should they fight? They'll figure out who's the best representative of their beliefs. And why don't the Dems and Republicans work it out among themselves? You know, they used to. Why do we really need primary election? I know it's so Democratic. But what's not Democratic is that the independent or the other parties, political parties that have agendas and have been around for decades, and nobody's a criminal or corrupt or doing treasonous things in the Libertarian or the Green Party, you know, they miss out on all the media publicity and speculation and mention. So, folks, hey, we're going to mention and get interviews here on this show with the Libertarian Party candidates for governor and reps as soon as we know who they are, probably before the summer starts, even along with the Green Party. And just because that's what we're here for, the alternative views and the things that the big media, the commercial media, that's really not willing to really support our democracy fully and making their news stories open to all these sides of the issue. So we'll do that. And so that's who's running now, and I think it's very interesting. It's going to be quite challenging. Oh, only 10 minutes to go before Highway 61. Now, today we're not going to have Joanne Korchinska with us, and just a word in case she's listening from home now. She was scheduled to help with the homeless marathon in Tuesday night, and because of the icy conditions, she slipped and fell and injured herself, and she probably wouldn't want me to mention this, but she is at home. She is recovering, so don't go ballistic at this point, but all of our thoughts and best wishes are to Joanne Kay, our blues music director and host of Highway 61. And so today we have some other DJs who will be sitting in. I think Mike, who did the big band show, is going to do the first couple of hours, and then our program director, Lynn, is coming in a little later to carry on here. So best wishes to you, Joanne. Hope you're resting fairly comfortably. We know that she still needs some doctor's care next week, but we miss you here at the station, so get well quick. Now, also, because I have it in front of me here, folks, this Sunday, Dearborn Youth Symphony, in case it's a little snowy or whatever, but at 4 p.m. in the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, also known as the Center, Michigan Avenue, Greenfield, the Dearborn Youth Symphony is having their concert. Yes, there's a small fee to get in, but it's a great family activity. These kids play really well. There's really some virtuosos in the Dearborn Youth Symphony. In fact, we had a couple of them that were helping with our pledge drive a couple of years ago. And kids 12 years old playing violin and you know, classical instruments like they've done it 100 years.
Yeah, they're incredible.
Brilliant. So hope you want to support that. Hope you can. This Sunday, 4 p.m., you know, I think the roads will be clear by then, I hope, to maybe get out and support them at the center. Also coming up later in March, in fact, March 13th, Saturday, March 13th, all day at the center, will be the Dearborn area Home and Garden Expo. I think 60, 70 different exhibits about ways to improve your home. And maybe by then, if the snow melts by then, that's only 2 weeks away or so. If the snow melts by then, you start thinking about home repairs, home fix up in the spring. And even if you don't think about it, go down there and support. It should be fun to find out the new ideas and all local businesses and local vendors. In fact, it was interesting. I went to a local restaurant. I thought it was a chain, a franchised national restaurant. I won't mention the name here locally. I went out with my daughter for dinner, and they made a big pitch. The waiters did. You know, we're locally owned. We have several restaurants, but only in Michigan. We're a Michigan. I mean, they're making a pitch for themselves to come back and on their mailing list and so on.
Excellent.
Yeah, way to come back and support that restaurant, which a lot of people might assume because they have several restaurants and big name and, you know, it looks fancy enough that it could be a chain that's all across the U.S., which maybe isn't even the headquartered in Michigan. So support your local businesses and, you know, maybe find out ways, try to be positive here about how to improve your home and garden and maybe do things that'll be energy efficient or less expensive than what you might have predicted. Okay, what else do we have here?
I had the gentleman's name and I wanted to highlight. His name is Ed Hingelberg, and that was the operations director of operations at Cass Community Social Services.
Okay,
so thank you for letting me.
He's there full time all the time.
He's an essential
member there of the Cass Corridor.
Oh, absolutely.
Community Center.
And I would say he and Reverend Faith Fowler, who is the executive director, they were there the entire 14 mm-hmm. hours also, and then some to clean up. So incredible people.
Yeah, I bet that was some cleanup too.
I had to get to school.
Oh, too bad.
I wanted to help.
Mm-hmm.
Amy, what do you? Well,
they probably knew where to put the stuff back, you know, because they live there. They have to work there every day.
Jay's obviously seen me put things away around the station. It doesn't go there.
Yeah, your desk is not too bad. Could be worse. Let me also mention here, and it's a really nice thing, so we'll end with something nice. A graduate of Henry Ford Community College got her nursing degree here. But she was diagnosed a few months before that with a terminal illness, cancer, I think. And she really wanted to get her license, her nursing license. And so the nursing staff here at the college and family and friends put a request to get an honorary nursing license awarded to Katie. Don't have to worry about the last name. In fact, that bill is now an official bill. It allows a quick movement through the legislature for someone who's dying to get an honorary nursing license. And it's called Katie's Bill. That's the way it was introduced.
Awesome.
And she did get this document just a few days before she died. That tugs at your heartstrings, doesn't it, folks?
Absolutely, goosebumps.
But I have to go on, and that's a wonderful thing to do. And all the people here at Henry Ford Community College, the community, they sent emails, they wrote letters to Polidori and other reps in Congress there, and our politicians just sped it right through.
Well, they're all to be commended.
Why can't they speed through anything else? Why can't we get consistency on human issues? You know, that matter to all of us that are just as important as Katie's issue. And it's wonderful that they did this, but you know, we don't have gridlock in Congress. They can make things happen if they want to. And I hate to end on that sort of negative spin on this, but that's what Katie's bill means to me. Things can be done in our democratic system. Our legislators know what's good and bad, and they're letting partisan politics rather than what's good for the majority of people take effect here. It's really sad. Well, it's sad that Katie died too, of course, and anyone else that's suffering. I assume she had some health care insurance of some sort, at least. That's not the issue. Well, I guess we're just going to wrap it up now. We can't. 3 minutes. Look at that. We ran out of things to say.
Seriously?
Okay, I'll find something else. Okay, here's just a funny little humorous thing. We've been following, since he's been deluging us with press releases. Why? Because he's rich. Okay, Rick Snyder is running for Republican governor of Michigan, and there'll probably be several Republicans announced. Denise Illich announced. Was she going to be a Democrat, though?
I think Democrat.
But I just heard this week somebody told me, wasn't you, Amy, no, that she dropped out already.
Did she really?
Yeah.
Maybe Tom Wilson told her this wasn't a good idea.
Oh, boy.
Well, I don't know. So I don't know if she's still in there. But Republicans, we know that the sheriff of Oakland County, Mike Bouchard, that he's running. So the choice of Republican for governor will be decided in that primary on August 3rd also. Okay. But Rick Snyder, he's had one TV spot, which I haven't seen yet. And I watch a lot of TV. I guess I'm watching the wrong channel.
You like it, Amy?
The first one was entitled Nerd for Governor. And a new one here, and we got a press release from him because, again, he's got PR, he's got press, he's got email, oh boy, is called Superman. And this is his spot. And these are the words. Of course, they have the pictures go along, but imagine this. And it's,
I'll tell you what I think afterwards. Here's what it's Rick Snyder who is doing the narrating of it. He says, nerds get results. Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Warren Buffett. Shoot, Clark Kent saved thousands of lives. Well, as Superman, of course, folks. Okay, anyway. Michigan Snyder went on to say, can't be fixed. It needs a total reinvention. New innovative companies, great new jobs for families, all based on a solid business plan. It's what I've done all my life. Gateway Computer Company. They still sell them on Home Shopping Network or something.
Do they?
It's still a mail order company. They had a store in Dearborn, but it closed because they couldn't make their Gateway stores profitable.
My first official computer.
No kidding. Yeah. Yep. Well, they were kind of cool in the first couple of days, and he was part of that, he and one other guy. And so Snyder says, Gateway and so many startups that he's been involved in, all work, no play? Maybe. But this nerd, referring to himself, gets results. I think that's really interesting to see if the term nerd can be thought of as a positive thing. And would you vote for a nerd for governor? You know, can the public go to that ad campaign, to that spin? Can they go in that direction? I'm all in favor of smart people.
That's interesting.
And wise people. People have wisdom. And people that have the energy and the dedication to work long hours for the cause rather than get distracted by clearing brush at their ranch in Texas or something. You know, George W. Bush, he has a record. He's historic as president of the U.S. No president was ever on vacation more days altogether each year, all the years. I don't know which year he was more on vacation.
Right.
I think the year before 9/11, he was more on vacation.
I would say that's a pretty good
guess. But each year, unbelievable. I don't even know the number, but he tops them all for being on vacation.
Is that blessing or curse?
I don't know. A great call, but there I'll tell you what, I would break his record. That would be my goal. I'd be like, that's all you did? Come on.
Well, he didn't just clear brush at his ranch. He also rode his mountain bike around.
Oh.
And he fell a couple times, too.
Well, at least he didn't go out hunting with Dick Cheney.
Yeah, right. He wasn't. I don't think he was there that day, no.
Yeah.
But he
only a nice lawyer.
George W. knew which way the wind was blowing, though. Yes. I'll say that for him. So, which is interesting that now he's so laid low. He doesn't want to be part of anything. He did go with Clinton because his dad was with Clinton to give an appeal for Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't want to be part of anything. He was a speaker at one of those motivational things. Not one of these political conservatives. You know, like Conservative Political Action Committee met like a week ago. Big thing. Cheney spoke even.
Right.
George doesn't want to do that.
No, but when you work that hard for 8 years... And, sorry, I couldn't keep a straight face.
Sorry.
It's time for an extended vacation now.
Yeah,
really? Well, we don't want to put down a president, but historic, though, as he was.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
very historic.
You figure it out. Okay, we're going to say goodbye. We're going to play the theme, and Mike is up on deck to start Highway 61, the greatest in blues, and a lot of local blues here, too. And we're going to do that now. Thank you to Amy and Dennis. Dennis, you survived getting in. Hope you get home. thanks for the homeless marathon.
Give me a piggyback ride, I thought.
Thanks for the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Dearborn Times Herald. That's it for now. WHFR Dearborn, be careful out there. Take care. Tune in again next week. WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves.